Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. Telling you about my friends, Music Record Shop. Check them out, 4191A Manchester Avenue in the heart of the Grove. This Friday, new records from Kendrick Lamar, Deer Hunter, Def Haven, and first vinyl print of Goo Goo Dolls' Dizzy Up the Girdle. So go down there, check them out, pick up some new records. New music happy hour every Friday, live in-store performances on Saturdays and Sundays. This Sunday, live music from friend of the show, Cree Ryder. So go down there, 2 to 5 Sunday. Check them out online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, musicrecordshop.com.
Hey, this is Sean Cannon. You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Yeah. This is Rock Paper Podcast with Shane and his guests. You will listen to what he says. Shane will drive to your house and bring you brownies and talk for hours as it's Rock Paper Podcast.
Tell me why.
It's nothing but a podcast.
Tell me why.
All you gotta do is download Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
In the days of 99, wild as the ocean brine, I met a little girl with candy cane curls by the water. She said, I'm the daughter too, the king of the candy blues. But if you're on top, you gotta shake it on top of the world. So I took on the road, a one-man traveling show, making my Guinness city by city on the wayside. But of all the peaches in the tree, I'm only shaking down my sesame leaf. Look out, boys, I'm kicking up a pile of dust on that old big rock candy mountain up top where the sugar stopped. So sweet,
so sweet,
so sweet,
so sweet,
a little sassy. Send all your suitors home, I'm a-coming up from the county. My, oh my, oh my, oh, I only want to rock with you. All the actors at the bar, shooting up until the stars. Go to sleep,
go to sleep,
go to sleep,
go to sleep
in the morning. They wake up with the coffee right, singing she'll be coming round again tonight. Around the mountain, when she comes, she's gonna be mine. On that old big rock candy mountain up top where the sugar stops. So sweet,
so sweet,
so sweet,
so sweet,
little sassy. Send all your suitors home, I'm a-coming up from the county. My, oh my, oh, I only wanna rock with you. I only wanna rock with you. She got me rolling around, rolling around. She got got me rolling around, rolling around the bend. She got me rolling around, rolling around, rolling around the bend. By the rising of the moon, I made it up into her room and said, pretty baby, be my little lady on the landing. She said, I always knew you'd come for me from the gutters of the Golden City. Now we're on top, we gotta shake it on top of the world. On that old big rock, Candy Mountain up top where the sugar stops. So sweet,
so sweet,
so sweet,
so sweet,
little sassy. Girl, send by your sitters home. I'm a coming up from the county, my oh my oh my oh. I only wanna rock with you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from Sean Cannon's kitchen, or dining room, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, man, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's good to be here.
I'm glad this finally happened, man, because I think we went through some rescheduling.
Man, it was complicated.
Yeah.
But
Joe got sick.
Yeah, Joe, we've had a number of things got thrown in the mix there, but we've got it figured out. Here we are.
Here we are. I'm excited, man. I was listening to Falling Fences record on the way down, and I really dig it, man. It's some good stuff that I guess we'll start there. Well, I don't know. We'll get into it later. But I would... I'll start with you, man. You were kind of telling me a little bit of the backstory, but you're not originally from St. Louis, but you how long you've been here now?
Grew up in all over the state of Ohio, and my family moved around a lot. Got three younger brothers, so we were constantly making decisions based on what grade the kids were in. And so it must have been about the summer of 1997. I had just graduated from high school over there in Cincinnati, and my family relocated to St. Louis. They actually moved to Kirkwood, and my mom's a school teacher at Kirkwood High, and I ended up immediately going to my freshman year of college up at University of Missouri up in Columbia. So that decision to go to Mizzou versus staying in Ohio and staying with my high school friends and that kind of thing, that was sort of looking back in hindsight, that was kind of the big destiny builder right there, which led me to sitting here with you right now. So if I had to pin one decision that I made, the decision to go to school up there in Columbia set up, all the people who I've created music with, most of the people, it's sort of set everything onto its course.
What did you study up there?
I studied geography, man. So it was a trip, and I did, of course, classic 5 years of undergrad, and but it was somewhere in there towards the end where I came to a realization that music was what I wanted to do, was what made me the happiest. And I really don't think that there's an 18-year-old kid, there's not very many of them that know exactly what they want to be when they grow up. you know, I went to Mizzou and I didn't even have a major at first. And it's just like, you know, what 18-year-old kid really knows what they want to do? I mean, it's still, you're such a kid still.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, some kids are fortunate or, you know, to be able to figure it out at a young age. You know, and I was already playing music. I was in bands. I was doing that as, you know, it was a part of my life. So it wasn't like I went from, you know, completely not playing any music and having to learn everything at age 18. Like I had been, you know, my parents had a little bit of a musical background. My dad took me to all kinds of concerts growing up, which was a huge direct influence on me, you know. All the bands that he would take me to, like we would go see the Allman Brothers or Little Feet anytime they were within 2 hours of Cincinnati or wherever I lived. So, you know, that sort of rubbed off on me. But then it wasn't towards the end of college where I was like, you know what, like this world that I'm going down where with the geography degree where you go into, you know, mapping or you go into teaching, you know, teaching high school geography or I just all of a sudden it dawned on me that the music was really the only thing I was thinking about, you know, and it was like even when I was doing other jobs or working on projects, it was like it was there in my mind. But I didn't really come to that full like realization of that until I was about 21 right. or so.
Yeah. So then you, you're at Mizzou, and then what brings you to actually St. Louis then?
Yeah. So just to fill in the gap there, you know, my first college band was, in which we all still play music together and work on. We have an album we're recording. It's almost finished, but the band was called Bachman's Ufio, and we eventually shortened it to Bachman somewhere around 2007. But we actually started playing shows in 1999. I believe our first show was on summer break at Mizzou. It was like, you know, I think we formed during my sophomore year. And then right after that summer, we played our first show at the Red Sea down in Del Mar, down in the basement. And I'll never forget it. I was like, man, because I, you know, freshman year up at Mizzou, it was like, I was a new kid. I didn't know anybody. Struggle to meet girls, man. You know, even in the dorms. But it's like when you don't have any allies and you go into an environment like a big state school, man, it was freshman year was hard. So then sophomore year, you know, we work on this band, and by the time it launched, it was just like, you know, I was like, oh, you know, sort of my coming out of my childhood as a late bloomer. Well, that was rectified pretty quickly once the music thing started rolling. So that, I'm not saying that the girls fueled my fire, but I'm just saying that was definitely a you know, an added bonus.
Sure.
So not having to worry about that, because you know how when you're a kid, man, you just worry so hard about that stuff, man. You're like, it's like in your head. Like I wish I could go back in time in a time machine and just be like, yeah, dude, you know, if everything's gonna work out, yeah, man, right, like stop crying. So like, you know, the band started taking off, and like we became the, like, you know, the college band at Mizzou from probably like 2000 and through the mid 2000s, the year 2000 being like when we really, you know, we were packing the Blue Note and playing all original music. We started, you know, traveling around. We actually even made it out to like the High Sierra Music Festival. We're invited out there 2 years. So we started to make a bit of a splash, and we, being that we were young and you know, fearless, we went ahead and like moved in together, quit our jobs. Like we tried to make a full go at it, and you know, that was at like age 23, 24, 25. Certainly far too young to be wise enough to succeed at something like that.
All right.
But the experience is invaluable. But you know, we went down the path of like we hired a booking agent, we hired a manager, we hired a publicist. And it was just like we had all these expenses, and we were, you know, like doing things like paying the band house rent with credit cards, like just making every stupid mistake like that you can possibly, a 24-year-old can possibly make. We made all of them like twice, and sometimes more than that. So it became this thing where, you know, somewhere along the band's career in around 2007 or 8, we put out like the best record we ever made, which was called Chasing Dragons. We were like really riding high off that record until our manager calls and says, you know, hey, I'm flying in from San Francisco. We have to have a meeting with, you know, we have to have a meeting with, you know, the family. We have to discuss a situation. And we, you know, we were just so naive that we were like, oh man, this is going to be great big news. It's going to be awesome. And he gets there and we're like, okay, we are $50,000 in debt. So how are we going to go about, you know, what are we going to do about that? And so that kind of, you know, it didn't necessarily sink us as we, you know, we still exist as, in, you know, as creating music together. But man, we just did everything the wrong way. Although there was a lot of joy along the way and a lot of memories. And I could tell you all about tours and people we played with and, being at that age, 24, 25, 26, those are lifelong experiences. And so anyway, that was the band. And so just to give you a little bit more of the backstory there, just to wrap this up here, two of the guys were from Kirkwood, Andrew Weir on keyboard and Will Reeves on bass. Our drummer was from Chicago, Danny Carroll, who we met at Mizzou. So, we're all living there in Columbia together, you know, and Andrew, so we you know, I had sort of the St. Louis, I'm playing in a band with St. Louis guys, and my family lives in St. Louis, so like my seeds were already kind of planted here. Right. So when I finally moved here in 2008, you know, I had already had years of networking from playing in St. Louis. You know, and of course, you know, the first gig I got here as far as like a regular gig, you know, I'd been playing Cicero's and the Pageant and all those, but periodically every couple months. But I got a weekly gig at McGurk's down in Soulard. This has been September of 2008 with another one of the guys who went to school at Kirkwood with Andrew and Will, named Joe Stickley. He was actually Will's roommate in college. They lived across the street from me on Wilson Avenue. Both of our houses are now demolished.
Oh, yeah.
But we were neighbors, and as kind of their, in the formative years of Bachman's UFO. So Joe and I established a friendship there, and he would eventually start playing with us, and we would call it Joe Stickley's Blueprint. And so Joe and I had sort of this, you know, we had developed a musical friendship. We were obviously, you know, we had a lot of the same musical influences. You know, just got along great, man.
Yeah. It's
been, all these guys that are like family to me that I'm talking about. Will Reeves, Andrew Weir, Danny Carroll, Joe Stickley. That's like the band I say I grew up in it, but I mean, we started when I was 19. I'm 36 now. So I feel like, you know, that's like my lifelong band. I grew up in it. You know, we're essentially brothers. Our families are all close. Parents are close with them. I mean, it's like a family.
Sure.
And so when I first got this gig on Sundays, I would travel in every week from Columbia. And at this, around the same time, I started dating my now wife, Jocelyn. And so there was, you know, there were some things pulling me to St. Louis that hadn't really necessarily been there before. And, you know, eventually after 12 years of living in Columbia, right around there, 2008, 2009, I moved full time to St. Louis. So that's sort of the, I tried to make that as short as I could.
Oh, but it's, yeah, yeah. It's great, man. Yeah. So when you, so you get the gig at McGurk's.
Mm-hmm.
And you and you started playing with Joe a lot there?
Yeah. So, you know, Joe and I had had this history of playing
like in a rock band setting where we would, my rock band Bachman would back him up as Joe Stickley's blueprint. I believe I mentioned that a little bit ago. And so we sort of had a little bit of a chemistry already from that. And then, you know, he gets a call. The couple who had been performing at McGurk's for like 25 years on Sundays and Mondays, their names are Bernie and Barbara McDonald. They did like really traditional storyteller type Irish folk music. And where it was almost more of a coffee crowd, very educational. They would tell lots of stories. Very mellow. And so when they retired there in 2008, McGurk's needed a new band. And through the grapevine, Joe had been networked with the family that owns McGurk's, the Halloran family, who have been great to us over the years. And they offered us Sunday and Monday nights there. At the time, I was in Columbia, and I was like, well, why don't we just start with Sunday nights and see where it goes? And, you know, the money was right, so I started traveling in every week to do the Sunday night for the first year there. I drove in, and, you know, and I would see Jocelyn and play with Joe, and you know, it sort of started as we would just play, you know, whatever cover songs we could come up with, just whatever to get through the night. And we just played acoustic. I played a little mandolin. He played guitar. Every once in a while, I tap on a tambourine. And so we get a little bit of bluegrass thing going on. And we actually had quite a bit of resistance at McGurk's for a while because, you know, if you're unfamiliar with McGurk's down in Soulard, they have live Irish music there 355 nights a year. I mean, it's pretty much 7 days a week.
Right.
They close a handful of days a year. So this place garners an incredible reputation for being a hotbed of Irish music, like not only in St. Louis, but like one of the most pure Irish, traditional Irish music hubs in the United States. I mean, to the point where they fly in musicians from Dublin to play, and they put them up in an apartment next door. It's a pretty unique place. I mean, it's, you know, you go over to Dublin and all the musicians, they all know about McGurk's.
Very cool.
So it's kind of all of a sudden we found ourselves like fish out of water musically, because we're like, hey, guess what? You know, we're just a bunch of, you know, we're a bunch of Americans from Kirkwood, you know, we're like, right. We don't know any Irish music. So we kind of took as a challenge upon ourselves to start learning the pub songs. That actually led to a record that Joe and I made called Loaded to the Gunnels, which was a collection of pub songs. And we actually wrote a couple songs like the staple down there that we do, that we wrote, Irish Old Ladies. It was on that record. So it started slowly. I mean, we're now in year seven. We've done 7 years of this Sunday night show, and the band has grown, you know, from that little almost like Tenacious D acoustic duo to like full on, you know, I do this elaborate percussion rig with my feet. We've got original songs, very crowd participation oriented.
Yeah.
And we've learned, you know, we know like 30 Irish songs now. So it's like that's a whole catalog that we've developed that, you know, had it not been for McGurk's, I'm not sure I ever would have learned a lot of these songs that that are from that tradition. So it's a unique thing for us, like coming from like the more Appalachian Ozark like bluegrass tradition, you know, whereas it's kind of unique because bluegrass music started, you know, as almost an offset of Irish music, like the Northern Irish and the Scotch Irish and the, you know, Catholic Irish settlers came over and settled into the hills, just geographically the same hills that most resembled Ireland, you know, your West Virginia and your Virginia and your Kentucky and Missouri. And so, you know, our heritage is being Americans, and our family names from the last couple hundred years, you know, we come from more of that tradition, and then we went sort of took that tradition back into the Irish thing. And so it's almost like a full circle, you know, thing for us. And we've kind of stumbled across something we feel is pretty unique, you know, that's obviously taken 7 years of playing every week to get there. But, you know, we definitely, that band is with Joe Stickley, it's definitely, you know, turned into an animal unto itself.
When did Ryan join?
Yeah, somewhere in there after a couple years. You know, sometimes we would have like our friends from Bachman, Andrew and Will, or those guys would come sit in, and we would be like, "Oh man, this is nice with bass." And we got to a point where we were finally like really the Sunday night show was really starting to pick up steam. You know, the bar ring was double or triple what it was before. And growing, so you know, we got the offer to get I believe the owner, Jim Holleran, he said, "What do you boys need? Are you boys ready for a raise?" And we said, "Actually, Jim, we're hoping to make the same amount of money that we've always made, but if you guys could start paying a third guy, we're really interested in, you know, adding a bass player." You know, with the foot percussion that I do, I mean, the bass is not necessarily an instrument you see in Irish music. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, your Irish musicians that would come through to usually, like, a guitar and a banjo and an accordion, you know, amongst other things. But with me doing the foot percussion thing that I had developed, the bass was definitely something that we needed to color that, you know. I hit this kick drum pad, you know, that hits a sub. So now having a note to color that, all of a sudden the band just sounded really full, and we knew it that was, you know, instead of getting a raise for the two of us, adding that sonically, that low end would fill out the sound. And sort of so, you know, after a couple years there, I believe it was somewhere 2010, maybe 2011, that we added Ryan full time. And for those of you guys, Ryan Kennedy, great guy. He goes by a stage name of Chewy Knife, which is you have to ask him about it, but people seem to really like that.
Right.
That's a great stage name. But yeah, so we've got the core trio, and then we've eventually just recently added a drummer pretty much full time, aside from when we play at McGurk's. Whenever we play anywhere else, we use a drummer by the name of Joe Winsey, who a lot of people in the scene would know him from Matahoochee or Pepperland.
Okay.
Fantastic singer, drummer. He really fits in well with us. We're all old friends, so it feels, you know, it's not like, who's this new weird new guy on the drums? It's like, well, here's our friend that we've been swimming upstream with for 15 years. Now he's swimming in the same boat as us. Yeah. You know, we're paddling up in the same boat. So it's
So you guys get together, you're jamming, and then when did this record come out?
Yeah, so like the first is somewhere in there. I'm gonna say like 2013. Well, we'd always discussed the idea of having a band name,
right?
And because for the longest time, you know, it was just, go see Joe and Sean at McGurk's. Yeah, you know, we'd almost just go by our first names because that's what everybody down there would just call us, Joe and Sean. And so, like, even when we did the CD of Pub Songs, it was called Joe Stickley and Sean Cannon, Loaded to the Gunnels. But, you know, we had discussed the idea of adopting a band name. And you know how band names are. They're very difficult.
Sure.
And it's almost just like second nature just to shoot it down as soon as somebody says what it is, you know, like, oh, no way, that's horrible. Or you might say something like a little bit friendlier, like, yeah, I'll think about that. Let's put that on the list. In actuality, there's no way in hell you're going to go by whatever the name is. So Joe came at us with this band name. And at this point, we had kind of started, you know, he and I kind of started writing some new material. We had like kind of resurrected some older material and adopted the songs we did with Bachman, like or in a more rock band setting, we'd like made them more folky. And so we had a few of those, and it was like, you know, we might have enough songs to start thinking about a record. And so he came at us with this band named Falling Fences, which is from an Irish proverb, I believe, that states, the old falling fences have ears. And so he said he was always really taken with that. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much, for the first time in my life, felt attached to it right away. You know, one of those things where like, well, that's definitely, and it, you know, another person described it as, you know, listening to the band Falling Fences, you know, you can kind of hear the fences between genres just falling down and just, you know, everything, okay. Everything sort of blending, bleeding together, you know.
Well, I forget the track now, but there's a lyric, on the record, something about fences falling.
Yeah, in Shot to the Devil, which yeah. That song itself is kind of, that's the first track on the record, and it's kind of, that song itself kind of, you know, is the epitome of the genres falling down, because it's like a sweeping movement of three different parts. You know, it goes from bluegrass to like almost like a Pink Floyd-y ballad-y thing with weird sound effects, to like this almost like pop thing at the end, where we're kind of melding different instruments, and it, you know, the song kind of, you know, takes on many forms within it. So yeah, that's the, you know, he threw that lyric in there about the fences falling down, and so that song Shot to the Devil, that's what I feel like, you know, we wrote that and we were like, oh my God, that's like 8 minutes long, right. with no jamming. So it's like, well, we're kind of, if we're able to do that and it's not boring the listener, then this is probably an interesting avenue to pursue with the songwriting. So that kind of, you know, set the table for some of the other tunes, and then of course the newer ones that we're working on for the next record are like that too.
Yeah, for me, I was listening in Little Cersei. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that was a fun one, man. I loved it.
Yeah, we kind of got the We Will Rock You, sure, yeah. Stomp Some Claps, yeah. Going on there.
And it's super catchy with that. But then, like, you know, I found myself singing along before the end of the song. Like, it just, it's super catchy little hook.
We learned a lot about that stuff, you know, getting people to sing along on the first listen. Like, that's the big thing with the Irish music that's rubbed off on us, because the, you know, the pub songs are designed for, you know, when they're, you know, executed correctly, it's like, do you get the crowd sings with you the whole time. And so we've kind of taken that energy and placed it into, like, you know, the original songs, whereas, you know, people will come down. Like, we'll have a band from Dublin, and they'll say, hey, I've never heard any of those Irish songs, and you guys had everybody singing those. Like, what songs are those? And we have to tell them, which is always a nice feeling to say, like, those are our songs,
yeah,
you know?
Sure.
But that's kind of, like, one thing that we really took from the Irish music was, you know, make people sing along.
Yeah.
It's not even, like, a negotiable thing. Right. It's like, this is what's happening. You can join the rest of the room if you want to or not. And being able to apply that to the original thing is really it's really fun. So like down there when we play on Sunday nights, you know, you can expect to hear some Irish tunes, but you know, a lot of times the songs that go over the best are the ones that we've been doing over and over that we've written, yeah, that people hear every week. And we try to make it even easier on them by making the songs catchy enough, yeah, that you can, you know, recall it from last time, or
sure,
maybe by the third chorus you kind of already got it, yeah, you know, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah, well, and a couple of pints of Guinness will help you out. Yeah, help you out too.
Oh man,
there was another one that stood out. Is it Paola Road?
Yeah, right. So Paola. I don't even know how he says it. I think it's Paola.
Yeah.
It's the road that goes, it's in Lesterville, Missouri. It's the road that goes back into, off of the, whatever, Route 19 or whatever route it is down there. that goes, like, it's at the general store, and it's the road that goes back down, swings around to Black River Lodge and Bearcat Getaway. So that's the name of the road, and you know, the chorus, I'm going down Paola with the radio high in the satellite glow. I mean, it's kind of like, we always set it up as like, this is a floating song.
Yeah.
This song's like, you know, here in Missouri, we all experienced the float trip.
Sure.
And it's like this song, we sort of tried to, you know, sum up the, without singing about like, we're going floating down the water, you know, like we're not going to, we try to allude in a very indirect, discreet way,
yeah.
But it's essentially about the spirit of how it feels to get together with a bunch of friends and go floating or camping or whatever,
yeah.
You know, and we like to evoke the emotion of those things rather than actually like explaining that's what it is, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like with the lyrics. So the lyrics, you kind of draw your own conclusion, but the emotion of it, that's what we're going for.
And you co-wrote lyrics with Joe on this, or?
Yeah, I've got I don't know, a handful of verses on the record. Yeah. A lot of times, we'll approach it like, hey, I'm going to sing and write this second verse or whatever, and then sometimes like he'll come at me with hey, I have this song, I've got two verses written and a chorus, and he'll be like, I'll work on it and we'll try to get this thing going. And anyway, I'll have the song in my head, and later on that night I'll just text him a verse,
yeah,
and be like, hey, how about this for verse 3, sit with it. And then the next day he comes back. It's like, oh, that works great. Here we go. You know, this is it. It's done. And so that kind of thing helped towards this. Or like, you know, when we collaborate too, a lot of times he'll just come, like I said, with a couple verses and a chorus. And, you know, I sort of take it, turn it into, for lack of a better term, like a Falling Fences song, where it's, mm-hmm. there's a bridge, there's like little melodies in between the verses. You know, here's the arrangement. You know, we're going to put some solos in here or not. Like, here's another little melody, or put an outro jam, or like, I'll, you know, say, hey, the chords are changing too fast. Let's slow this thing down. Or like, he'll be like, hey, I've got this new ballad. And I'll be like, let's try that one like 10 times faster. And now it's a lightning fast bluegrass song. Or let's put like a nice funky beat to it, you know. And so I kind of try to sort of act as like producer, arranger.
Right.
I wear basically a lot of the hats, and then he, you know, he has the essential lyricist.
Yeah.
And sort of establishes like the beginning of what would be a melody. Sometimes he comes at me with songs that are just done. I'm like, dude, that's the song. It's already there. But then, you know, other times I'm like trying to force them out of them, because I'm obviously I'm like, let's go, come on.
Yeah.
And so then I'll, you know, I'll kind of help push the thing over the goal line.
I heard some horns on the record too.
Yeah.
Who played horns?
My good longtime friend of ours, Alex Daish, who he performs some music here around town. It would be he's very, very eccentric friend of ours. Plays the trumpet and the accordion. He has an album coming out of his own. But he played the trumpet parts. I pretty much scored all the horns for the record. Sort of along that like arranger, producer hat. You know, is one of the things I did. I scored the horn parts. Which are fairly simple. I mean, sure. There's a couple things. I think I ripped off the Beatles at some point in there. But, you know, so Alex came in and just, you know, he's a friend of ours, and he came in with his trumpet and basically executed. I can't play the trumpet. Otherwise, right. I just would have done it myself. So, yeah, Alex came in, and we got him on the record, and we've played a few times live where we've had him up there with us, and like even had like a couple guys in the Funky Butt Brass Band horns. Who I play with all the time, they like to get up there and play the parts too.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, if it was those guys, because They seem like they play a lot of records.
Yeah, they do. You know, we didn't get them for this last record. You know, it doesn't mean we won't use them. You know, I'm playing with them. I rehearsed with them last night for like 6 hours. So, I mean, we're very much intertwined at this point here in the St. Louis scene.
I picked up that latest Anna Cam and the One Drops album.
Oh, yeah.
And they were killer. It was great to hear some...
Nate Hershey is on keys on that, Funky Butt Horns. All Aaron Cam and the One Drops are fantastic. They make me proud every time I see them. Like, these guys are from our town, killing it.
Yeah, they're fantastic. Well, I guess that would kind of lead into that. You mentioned your rehearsal. You do you do Wednesday nights at the Oyster Bar. With voodoo players.
Yeah.
And so this is like a weekly kind of a... You pick like various artists and you play various sets of their music, right?
Yeah, it's sort of a theme night. Yeah. You know, and I use usually whatever theme we decided to play. When I say theme, I mean like, you know... We've done, like, we'll do, like, a whole night of Bob Dylan songs or a whole night of Neil Young songs. Or, like, we've even done, you know, Hank Williams Sr. and the band. And, you know, I can't even list them all off the top of my head. But
You had Clapton.
Clapton we got coming up, which actually is fun because we do, like, Cream songs and, like, Derek and the Dominoes songs and the Clapton solo stuff. So we kind of pick from, you know, we tend to do, like... artists and bands that have a huge catalog of well-known material.
Right.
So, like, I'm not going to do, like, you know, I got one buddy that's like, dude, when are you doing Molly Hatchet Night? I'm like, dude, they only have, like, two or three songs that people know. Like, I'm not going to freaking do Molly Hatchet Night, you know? So it's like, it's hard, you know, and you start, you know, thinking about bands and you're like, well, they've got 10 songs or, you know, but with doing the Oyster Bar show, you know, we do two sets. It's like a whole night. So you tend to pick bands like the Beatles or Bob Dylan, where you've got hundreds of songs that people know. There's the Rolling Stones, you know, you have a ton of material to choose from that's well known. You're not just up there doing B-sides all night. Because although we love a couple B-sides in the show, when it's one after another, it's like people are just like, okay, well, this is cool. But I mean, people are there to hear the songs that they know. Like, we do Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and it's like everybody knows every song.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, in a bar setting, you gotta keep hitting with the hits. And
keeping
stuff.
It loose, man, and that's why I like doing this gig at the Oyster Bar because it's just there's such a loose vibe there. You know, it's like they built that place sort of with like New Orleans in mind,
right?
And so, which New Orleans has steeped in musical tradition, so it just feels good. Man, I just really enjoy playing out on that patio.
Yeah, it's a great spot, man. It's one of my favorite places to visit. Wasn't too long ago, I think I was there like four nights in a row. Like, just cause it was just a, you know, someone just, it was, I think like Funky Butt played like I think it was like Emily Wallace on a Thursday, Funky Butt on Friday, Aaron Cam on Saturday, or something along those lines. And I was like, all my favorites are down there.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep
going. That place to stay, that's another place, man. Seven nights a week, you can find music down there, down on South Broadway there at the Oyster Bar.
Yeah.
But, it's been a fun thing, man. You know, I started it almost 2 years, every Wednesday. And, you know, it started as kind of like what was going to be sort of a, you know, I had this idea for it to be more of an open jam where I was kind of leading the charge. And then I found out, you know, through trial and error that people really respond when it's like one particular band or like, you know, I do like a night of Phish from Vermont, you know, and have the Provels play with me and we would do all Phish tunes and people would just come out in droves for that, you know? And so I was like, well, maybe this is more effective when we do Rolling Stones night or, you know, Bob Dylan night.
Right. I just keep thinking about that Molly Hatchet night, just you doing Flirting with Disaster, like, on repeat.
Yeah, I know. It's the same. Even with Lynyrd Skynyrd, it's like, okay, you know, you, you can name 10 to 12 Skynyrd songs, but man, we need like 25 to get through a night. So like, what do you do after that? You're doing working for the MCA. I mean, you're like, you start getting really into the deep cuts.
Sure.
And then it's like, all right, is this, you know, there's a, sometimes there's a reason that these are deep cuts, you know?
Sure. There's a, man, speaking of a Skynyrd cover, I was listening to, there's a rock band. They're not like, I don't think they're doing anything anymore. I think they split, but they're from Southern Illinois somewhere, I think. They were 30-06, and they were pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And they did a cover of Was I Right or Wrong?
Oh, man. Great tune.
Yeah. And they make it like, you know, pretty heavy rock. And
yeah.
And I'm like, it just sounds so good. Like, I mean, the lyrics are fantastic in that song, but his voice lends well, very well to it. And just, you know, I was like, man, this is like, if you would, you know, if I would have just heard that, like, this would be a big hit, you know, for them. But like, if, of course, it's a Skynyrd cover.
Right.
It's, like, it's hard to really, there are bands that make it off of covers, but it's like, it's hard to really get a lot of traction with a cover.
Man, it is. You know, I always tell younger bands, like, you know, if you want your band to really grow up and grow out, the number one thing that you can do is record a brand new record of killer original songs with a great production value. Like, don't skimp on that recording either.
Yeah.
Don't be like 2 years down the road, you listen back to it, and, oh, I wish we would have done that. Oh, why didn't we fix that? Oh, that guitar's out of tune. Like, just make sure you take your time, and then you spit out, you know, the best original music that you can with all the blemish. I mean, if you're a raw punk band or like kind of like trash grass band, obviously you need some rawness in there. It depends, I guess, what kind of genre you're playing. But, you know, for me, it's like, you know, I always treat the live show completely as a different animal than the studio.
Yeah.
I like when I go in the studio, it's more of a craft. I'm not going to do a big 2-minute, 3-minute guitar solo, or like with the Schwag, 10-minute guitar solo. I'm not going to do that on the dang record, man. Yeah. It's just like, you know, I wouldn't want to hear myself play for 10 minutes, let alone on the, you know, forever captured in a studio, which is, it's hard to let it flow out of you like that when you're in the studio anyway. So we kind of always gone the other direction and more of like a Beatles approach.
Yeah. So with Voodoo Players, you're bringing in like some of the best. I mean, I've on this rehearsal you had Adam Huckey. I saw you.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the rest of the guys are funky, but Ben Reese is on there too.
Yeah, right? Ben Reese. So you know, and like, that's been a big thing with it, is I've discovered that it's kind of become a networking thing for the local scene, because like, one of the things I'm really proud of about it is like, I'll have, you know, guys come on to play this show with me, and some of which have never met before.
Yeah.
And then I hear like a couple weeks later, like, they're doing a gig together.
Right.
And like, at first, like, I remember one guy's like, hey, is it okay if I use this guy from this other band that played with me at Voodoo on bass in my gig coming up? I'm like, dude, that's the freaking whole point of this.
Yeah.
Like, this is like for us to strengthen the music community, and for a lot of us to, instead of just playing in our little, you know, secular bands, mm-hmm. like, let's have some overlap, you know, mm-hmm. let's mix it up. And you know, I've sort of settled into a formula with how we do it. Like, we'll do, you know, I'll use a Spotify playlist and usually send it to the guys a few weeks out, and then we'll rehearse, you know, the night before. If it's like a brand new one that we've never done, we'll rehearse twice. So last night, you know, I had my first rehearsal for next week's Voodoo Player show, which we're debuting. A big band, you mentioned the Funky Butt Horns are on that gig, doing all Van Morrison songs. And, you know, he's one of my favorites, and the songs are so fun. You know, we put the 8-piece band together. And sort of kind of what we do, you know, I was talking about the formula for how we do this. You know, like, about a third of the songs we will play the exact arrangement and really just try to make it sound like exactly how you you know, you know it in your mind on the record. Like we're trying to nail like a third or a half of the stuff. The other half, you know, is sort of a mix between, you know, us either doing a reinterpretation or sort of just stretching the arrangement. Like, okay, we're gonna put a solo or two in here. And also, you know, we try to stretch the arrangements because, let's face it, I mean, the Oyster Bar gig's 3.5 hours long. I mean, there's two 90-minute sets or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you're talking about 3 hours of music, if you're going to play 3-minute songs all night, well, then guess what? Hey, guys, we got to cram 45 songs.
Yeah.
Like, if we cram 23 or 4 and jam a few of them out to get through that time. So we try to come up with creative ways of doing that without it ever becoming loose. A lot of people talk about use the word jam band.
Yeah.
Well, there's certainly an art to it, and you and I both know that there's a lot of jam bands out there who do not really achieve they don't have the art of it down. They're just, it's very loose, and a lot of times you can attribute it to, lack of experience or, more they're maybe necessarily not taking it as seriously, or they're trying to just get lost. That's the goal, and I mean sometimes that's the avant-garde side of it that's cool. Me, personally, I enjoy a long jam as long as it's interesting, and believe me, for it to become uninteresting can sometimes happen in one note or two. Now it can happen really quick, and so that's one thing I've, with my ADD, I can get bored very easily, and so if the jam's not going anywhere, I've gotten a lot of experience in pulling the plug before it hits that point where it's like yawn fest,
right?
And so there's an art form to that. Knowing when you've gone too long in the jam versus knowing when you've arrived, and sometimes when you arrive and you can spin into a different direction and you can arrive over there too, that's when you're able to do that. I mean, that's when you get to more of the high tier, high caliber jam bands.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not, a lot of them struggle with that.
You just had Big Mike out for a Voodoo Night, right?
Yeah, we did right after B.B. King passed away. Of course, my first... Whenever a legend, especially a legend that had direct influence on my playing, my first instinct is to, okay, we've got to do... like when Levon Helm from the band passed away, we threw a tribute concert together in like a week, and had it at Off-Broadway. And so the same thing with B.B. King, I booked it pretty soon right after he passed. And, Big Mike was my first thought of, what blues guitar player. And I hadn't actually even played with Big Mike at that point yet. That was our first time playing together.
Yeah.
And, man, we really hit it off. And it was like, and afterwards over beers, we're like, we both realized our favorite band in the eighth grade was the Black Crows, and like we got all these things in common, man. And it's sure. So that was a really neat experience playing with him. He's just fantastic.
Yeah.
You can catch him down at Beale on Broadway. I think he's there once a week now.
Sunday nights.
Yeah.
Free if you get there like before 9 o'clock, I think, or something. So
right. I would promote that further, but I also play on Sunday nights.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Come see Falling Fences.
Right.
Sorry, Mike.
He was another guy. Like I, being was a big fan of his stuff, but I had never really spoke with him, and I invited him to the show, and we sat at Herbie's Vintage 72. In Central West End, where he also plays every now and then. Sat in there and hung out.
Yeah.
Talked and had some, he ordered me a duck confit. It was like a, essentially like a duck burrito kind of thing. It was like I was wrapped in a.
Right.
Anyway, it was really good. He's, you know, he's like, "You ever had this before?" I'm like, "No." And he's like, "All right, just try it." And I'm like, "All right." So yeah. And, so we're sitting there, you know, talking and eating and stuff. But it was just we totally hit it off, man. He's just a super cool guy. Had some great stories. And
yeah, Mike's great, and he
a lot of fun.
He plays. You know, the guys that he's been playing and using in his band are a lot of the same guys I've been using with the Voodoo Players.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, he does a similar
kind of
thing with blues, having the Blue City All-Stars.
Revolving cast. Yeah, he does, man. And he's just fantastic, you know, making me proud of St. Louis.
Yeah. You mentioned your 10-minute guitar solos in the Schwag. I guess we'll talk about a little bit about your work there, and so people that don't know, the Schwag is a Grateful Dead
it's a bit of a different approach. I mean, there's several bands out there who do sort of the recreation thing,
yeah,
which is more along the lines of what you would call like a pure tribute.
Right.
You know, bands like Forgotten Space and then probably most famously Dark Star Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and depending upon how pure your rules are, you could even say, you know, further in these, you know, even the Dead and Company, who are coming as essentially a tribute band, because guess what? There's no Jerry Garcia out there.
Right.
Me, I kind of, you know, I think I don't like to really have to push everything onto one side of the line or the other.
Yeah.
But the Schwag is kind of cool because it's, instead of recreating, we reinterpret. So we kind of put our own creative twist on the songs, you know. Sort of similar to the Voodoo Players, where some songs we will play, you know, very, very true to form. And then other songs we kind of take and make our own arrangement out of, or sort of put our own emotion into it. And so, you know, people really respond well to the emotion of the band. Where that's kind of what I think we have, because we're kind of reinterpreting it and pouring our hearts into it in a different way, rather than me having to be like, oh, I should probably play this, you know, this particular solo or guitar run that Jerry did on, you know, Dick's Picks 4 or something, you know, like that. You know, when I first got the gig, Jimmy Tebow, the band leader, bass player, you know, he kind of told me right from the get go, like, hey, listen to a ton of Jerry, get his playing in your fingers, and then just forget it all. And so that was freak for me, because of course I took the gig seriously and still do, and try to listen to as much of Jerry's playing as I can, just to kind of get the idiosyncrasies of the attack and you know, the scales. You know, a lot of people assume that, you know, the Grateful Dead is, I remember my back to Mizzou here, my I took this jazz ensemble class and was always playing in like jazz combos and jazz ensembles back before the football program took over the school, and they got the marching band took over what was our jazz rehearsal room became storage space for the marching band.
Right.
And they did away with the jazz department. You know, that was sort of all culminated and they go into the SEC and become a big time football school. But back then, it wasn't necessarily as much like that. And I remember my jazz instructor said one time, he's like, oh, Grateful Dead, that's just like going up and down the Mixolydian scale with four or five guys. And, you know, we all laughed because whatever musician joke, it's Mixolydian's like a particular scale that sounds noodly. But as I've come to study this material from playing in the Schwag for the last 5 years, man, Garcia was just, you know, he would play all the scales. He would play all the notes that I once would consider as wrong notes. He would use them all in a passing way. So he would, you know, and so I've become very much more not to nerd out on you here, but very much more of a chromatic player since joining the Schwag and sort of listening to Jerry do all this chromatic playing, you know, being able to use all 12 tones has changed me as a musician and how I hear things. And, you know, so when I first moved here into St. Louis back in 2009, you know, I remember I got a call right around the time that Schwagstock got raided. And, you know, that could be a whole other podcast about Jimmy Tebow going to doing federal time for Camp Zoe. They essentially, you know, did a witch hunt on that place. And now they, you know, acid forfeiture. The state owns Camp Zoe now.
Yeah.
And they're making lots of money on whatever. It was a money thing. It's for another whole other deal. But when I first moved here, I remember I got the call from Jimmy right around that time, being like, "Hey, I heard you moved to St. Louis. Well, you should come play on Tuesday night. Do you know any Grateful Dead?" And I was like, "Well, just so happens, my dad, Bruce, has always been a huge Deadhead. Brought me up on a lot of this stuff, so I sort of had a bit of a basis to go off of just to get through that first gig, you know, where I could do Tennessee Jed and Friend of the Devil and some of these songs that I've, you know, Sugary that I've loved my whole life." But, you know, obviously it grew from there. I started studying the Garcia thing more and more. And, here we are, traveling around and playing Grateful Dead songs.
And so Jimmy's out of jail.
He's out of jail, man. He's still, I think, he got a little bit of probationary work left. Yeah. And, I mean, he's really nearing the finish line with all that, too. And he is, it's been an inspiration to see him go from, like, even communicating with him while he was in jail. Like, he had all these big plans to get the band up and rolling again. And, you know, we did, man. His first show back, we filled the pageant, you know?
That phrase, Blues Brothers, you know. We gotta get the band back
together. Yeah, gotta get the band back together. He did it, man. Yeah. He went around and you know, we've been putting on Schwagstock again just this last September. And so he is, man, the Schwag is in full flight.
Yeah.
We've got some great players on the roster right now. And, man, it's just a lot of fun. And just, you know, it's nice to be able to get out, you know, 3 weekends a month and go travel around and play to people that, you know, I play here in St. Louis and see a lot of the same faces. And I wonder if, like, man, these people are very supportive, but it's like, you know, it's a small, we kind of have a small pond here, even though within the context of a big city, you know, the percentage of people that actually go out and support local music, you know, is a smaller percentage of the overall population.
Right.
And, you know, you get to know people.
Definitely.
And it's nice to hit the road and come into a town where, like, we'll play in Des Moines, Iowa, and there'll be 400 or 500 people there. And we don't know any of them, right. You know. And so that makes it worthwhile, like, being away from home. Of course, I've got a family here. And, you know, it makes it – that's like, the thing that makes it tick, man. We get out of town and we have good crowds and playing, you know. I always make the joke, like, you know, if we have an opening band and there's a good crowd and they'll be like, "So are you nervous?" And I'll be like – all you have to do is go out and play some Grateful Dead songs, and, like, these people are all here to hear some Grateful Dead. So it's actually, like, a pretty, it's not a very intimidating proposition, you know, we have at hand here.
Right. So the Schwag, you can find all dates at theschwag.com.
Yeah.
But these guys are hitting the road. October 24th, Hillsboro, Illinois.
Yeah, just not too far away.
Yeah. October 30th, you mentioned Spookstock.
Yeah, so Halloween weekend, the 30th and 31st, we're having this big party under a tent, a heated tent. So if you guys are like, oh, it's going to be cold. Well, it might be cold. Bring your warmth for your camping if you stay in a tent. They do have a lot of cabins and stuff there. And it actually only is about an hour and 15 minutes from St. Louis. So if you wanted to drive down.
Ozark Outdoor in Leesburg, Missouri.
Yeah, it's Ozark Outdoors. Yeah. Very cool place, man.
And a couple friends we met. Aaron came and the One Drops will also be there.
We've got, man, of all the festivals that we've put together, this might be my favorite lineup. Cluster Pluck, a lot of fun from St. Louis. Aaron Cam and the One Drops. My good friends Andy Frasco and his band. They are on the bill. Mom's Kitchen, which is another group of a bunch of my good friends doing a Widespread Panic tribute.
Yeah.
Even Jake Willis, I think, is on the bill, who's just an amazing solo performer. I'm excited about this lineup, man. Yeah. Being underneath the tent, a heated tent, there's going to be a lot of energy in that tent, man. Oh, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a good party. And then you mentioned Dead and Company's coming to town, and you guys are playing the November 20th at the after party.
After party, yeah.
So come down to Ballpark Village and hang with the swag.
Yeah, it'll be free after party. So even if you don't go to the Dead and Company show, just come down to the Ballpark Village. It'll be free. We're going to play like midnight to 2, probably 2:30 maybe.
Yeah.
So we'll just freaking jam until they tell us to turn the lights on. So yeah.
And that's is that inside then?
It's inside. Yeah, it'll be November. Right. So, man, it'll be inside in that main room. You won't miss it.
I want the only... I went to, I guess, 2 shows I've been in there. The rest of them have been outside now that they got the outside stage going. But I saw Unifia and Real Big Fish one night.
Oh, there, cool.
Which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And this was like early on, and I don't think they realized Real Big Fish was as crazy as they are. And
right.
People are moshing and having fun.
Yeah.
And there was like no security. So it got pretty wild. But it was.
Yeah. Well, we hope we enjoy the. Of course, you want to have a certain amount of security.
Sure.
Idiots will get on stage. But hopefully they have a loose vibe for the swag crowd.
Yeah. I mean, that's
our crowd intends to enjoy a loose vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wink, wink.
The other show was, I think, was like I went to Third Eye Blind on the grand opening night. So that was a pretty good party. Yeah.
Real Big Fish and Third Eye Blind. Now you're taking me back to Mizzou.
Yeah, man, taking me back a little bit. So then November 26th, Uptown Theater in Kansas City.
Yeah, Thanksgiving night we do this show at the Uptown in Kansas City every year, which is a great old theater, man. It's like. It's such a neat place, and they take they really we've been there every year on Thanksgiving for a while. I don't even know how many years Jimmy's done it, but for me it's been 3 or 4 in a row. It feels like there's the one year that we didn't do it. Of course, Jimmy was in prison.
Yeah,
that'll do it.
Yeah, I went up there one night to see Stephen Lynch at Uptown. Like the so that's my only experience there, but it was a comedy show. But it's a neat place.
Very neat, man. Yeah. And it's hard to be away from home on Thanksgiving, especially. But those good people in Kansas City, they come out. I think we had 700 or 800 people last year, so that really takes the edge off, man.
And then your St. Louis holiday show. You guys are playing December 26th at 2720 Cherokee.
Yep. Right there, right down Cherokee, man. Yeah. That's old, so they have a lot of art and on display there. So it's really, really a funky place. We really feel comfortable in there.
Yeah, very cool. I read something. So you guys, you said you have your core group of musicians in the band, but I guess you guys have like honorary member sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the history of the swag, I think Jimmy started the band in the early 90s. We call it swag alumni.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably been 50 members of the swag over the years.
Right.
And sometimes life gets complicated and, the keyboard player or myself even sometimes, like we can't be there for a particular gig.
Yeah.
And so, we go kind of to the back to the roster of which is plentiful as you can imagine with all those years.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean it's sort of a roster band. You know, we have the core of us, which is of course Jimmy Tebow, who's always there. He's the mainstay band leader. His baby.
Yeah.
And then myself on guitar. And then on drums, Dave Clark, who I use on Voodoo Player Nights. You can see him a lot, probably every other week. He's back there at the Oyster Bar in the kit. And then on keyboards, we have Dan Engenthrone from Chicago and another guy here from St. Louis, Philip Manaus, who plays in the Provels, does some of the gigs too. Yeah, so we have various musicians.
Well, I read on the site you guys had some listed, and Devin Allman was mentioned on there.
Yeah, he's played a lot of shows with Jimmy over the years. Yeah, yeah. Man.
He's one of my favorites to watch, man. He's a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, he gets it, man. Yeah. He gets the passion and the emotion of performing. Like he goes to that place. Excellent. So I always enjoy watching him because I know he's there.
Yeah. So he played Broadway or not? Sorry, Bottleneck Blues Bar a little bit ago, and Learn from Casey recorded a segment with him for her show she does called the Local Produce Section.
Yeah.
And they just put that video out.
Cool.
And but what you said earlier kind of reminded me because he. There's a line in that video where he's talking about, how old he was when he started playing guitar.
Right.
And, you know, and same kind of thing. He said the ladies started taking notice.
Yeah, it's funny how an insecure young lad can be turned really quick when you put a loud screaming guitar in their hands.
The ladies, he said the ladies go, hey, you know, he's like, and they weren't like that before. So it was, he's like, it was a good feeling, but, anyway, it was a cool video. So if you haven't checked that out, go check out.
Yeah, I will have to, man. Yeah. And yeah, everybody check out Devin. I mean, he's another guy that makes us all proud of our scene here in St. Louis.
Yeah, I love that he, you know, he's been out all over the world, but he calls St. Charles home. So it's cool to that he stays here and he's proud to be from the area. So.
Yeah, man.
All right, well, then we. We're talking about Falling Fences, but I forgot to plug your dates here for you. You got you're playing October 22nd with the Bootleg, or at the Bootleg, sorry, at Atomic Cowboy.
Yep.
With Edward David Anderson and Chicago Farmer. You were saying you
very excited about that one. Yeah,
we were kind of talking off mic about you were really looking forward to that show because you said that the guy who was coming with.
Ed, Anthony Crawford is who produced Ed's record. This is a record release show for Edward David Anderson. You guys could check him out on Spotify, Facebook, wherever, everywhere, iTunes. Just fantastic songwriter, man. He had a band called Backyard Tire Fire that, you know, when I talked about swimming upstream together, you know, paddling in our own boats. Well, the Backyard Tire Fire and Bachman and Matahuchi and Speakeasy, these are sort of the regional bands that we all connected over back in the early 2000s. So we've got a lot of history. You know, myself and Ed, I've sat in with him. He's sat in with me many times over the years, and to the point where actually on his last record, he hired Bachman to be the backing band for the record.
Oh, cool.
Which he recorded at our studio up in Columbia where we record everything. And he had Steve Berlin from Los Lobos produce that record, which was awesome. And having that guy in our studio, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But on this new record, he's sort of stuck by that, having a wise old veteran of the rock and roll world, this guy named Anthony Crawford, who played in Steve Winwood's band in the 80s and co-wrote a lot of the 80s hits, including, like, you know, a record that I listened to over and over when I was really, really young, 7, 8 years old, Back in the High Life Again. And so we're actually excited because we're going to be at the show on the 22nd. We're going to be performing a couple of those songs with Anthony and Ed. So that's going to be pretty exciting, getting to play... you know, some legendary songs that I've known for my whole life with the person who wrote them. So that's that's exciting. And then having Chicago Farmer on the bill also is, man, he is just so fantastic as a sort of a rambling folk singer where, you know, big stories about every song. And he really takes you on a ride with his storytelling, which is very difficult to do. And his delivery is just impeccable. And he just writes great tunes, and he really serves as a great MC for if you're looking for that kind of thing. It's a solo act. He's just incredible. So Chicago Farmer, and then Edward David Anderson's CD release set, which he'll be performing with Anthony Crawford, and then Falling Fences will close out the night. And then at the end of our set, we'll bring up those boys and have some fun. So that's
nice.
Thursday the 22nd there over there at the Atomic Cowboy.
Yeah. Well, man, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I you know, like I said, coming down here, getting to meet you, getting to talk music with you, and
yeah, man,
yeah, it's been cool.
Well, I really thank you for your providing people in St. Louis and beyond here with a nice time capsule of what's happening in our scene. Getting a little bit more in depth, and a lot of the acts that you've been having on here are some of my favorite local acts. And I just say to you, man, keep doing it. This is great. We'll keep listening.
I have a blast doing it. So if people enjoy listening, I'm going to keep doing it. I just have a good time hanging with my buddies, man. It's been cool to be able to take that, you know, next being a fan to being a friend. And
Definitely. And you know, and it just strengthens our community, man. And you know, we all know this last couple years has been, you know, the community's taken a bunch of blows. Things have been really hard around here, and so having the music community there to kind of, you know, anchor us, and you know, all the artistic communities, I mean, it's what keeps us vital, and sustains us through, you know, what tragedies and things that might happen here in town. So man, I just love it. I love the scene here. I love the city.
Yeah, me
and
too, man.
Thank you for all you do to help that.
So. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm just trying to help out people I believe in, and I'm, you know, it's just whatever I can do to help. So I'm happy to provide this platform. And,
yeah.
Yeah. We can throw some tracks on from the Falling Fences album, which also is if you go to falling-fences.com, you can pick it up on CD or double LP vinyl.
Yeah, we've got it on vinyl. Falling-fences.com. And we're on, of course, if you're you can buy it on iTunes or listen to preview it on Spotify if you'd like.
Okay. I love that you mentioned Spotify, because not a lot of people, you know, the people have been ripping on them, like, you know, just
You know, it's easy to get hung up on that. For us, I mean, the amount of income that comes from online sales is so small that we really, I mean, just any way to get our music out there is first and foremost the most important thing. And I mean, I use Spotify, and you know, I have my qualms with it too, but hey man, if you want to freaking press play right now and listen to our record, I'm not going to stop you.
I like to, I mean, I might be a little naive or something, but I feel like for me, I'll listen to it on Spotify or things, and then like if I really like it, I go buy it.
Yeah.
And I would hope more people do that. Like, you know, go purchase a copy of it.
With Spotify is, you know, you can only stream it, you know? And like what happens when you're camping with your buddies and somebody's got a boombox and an 1/8-inch cable and, hey, but nobody's got cell phone reception here, so we can't get on Spotify. Well, then that's where, you know, owning it and being able to put it on an iPod or download it to a phone or onto a laptop or whatever your vehicle may be, you know, Because I know our music, we try to write music that's good to listen to when you don't have any cell phone service. Yeah. Or, out in the country.
Or dropping a needle on the turntable.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, man.
And we, finally, for the first time in my life, can say, folks can do that. We've got the Falling Fences record on vinyl. So.
Yeah. We can put a couple tracks on from the album. What do you?
Yeah, put on "Sitting by the Fire," and I actually I played a 1932 National Dobro.
Oh, yeah.
On this track that I borrowed from a friend, and it's a 4-string Dobro. I didn't even know if I could play it. He hands me this thing, and we've been trying slide guitar on various acoustic guitars, trying to get the right tone for this track, and to the point where we are starting to go crazy. And then Will, the bass player who owns a studio, Will Reeves from Bachman, who records basically anything I've ever recorded, he's done. He said, "Hey, man, I got this friend." It actually turns out to be Gabe Meyer from the Flood Brothers, another fantastic regional band. And he brought over this Dobro, man, from the early 30s. And it just, as soon as I put the slide onto the strings, we were just, some of the stuff that we used on the track might have been from that first, you know, that first track that we did. So, "Sitting by the Fire." Yeah, I've got a nice, nearly 85-year-old instrument on that one.
Yeah, that's one of those things. That's probably, you know, just like the the spirit or the mojo or whatever it is in that guitar. You know,
yeah,
like Dobro.
It almost played itself, man. Yeah. And the guys, I remember I got done with the take. I'm like, "So how's that? Is that something we might be able to work with?" And the other guys were just beaming and shaking their heads like they couldn't, they were like, "That's the thing. I think we got it."
Yeah.
You know, like,
very
what? Cool. I was just getting warmed up.
Yeah. Well, all right, Sean. So check out all of his projects, and I'll have all the links and dates and things all posted on the site too. So, come out Wednesdays to Oyster Bar. Come out Sundays to McGurk's.
Yep, I'll be there. You guys, you can find me there every week.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah, man.
It's been a lot of fun, man.
Yeah, brother.
We'll see you soon.
Packing up my bags for the great Northwoods. A little bit of loving and my friends and my goods. I got a bottle of wine for the trip. Mine's a little thirsty and I take a sip. Oh, yeah. That old Mother Hubbard got nothing on me. Sitting outside with the birds and the trees are dancing in the wind with the stars of the night. Oh, when they're gonna make everything right. Ooh. Sitting by the fire. Sitting by the fire. Sitting by the fire. Company is easy for an old oak tree. Another cup of coffee and strong on the tea. Got everybody under his eye. Every bit of loving in the big blue sky. Another cup of coffee and strong on the tea. Yeah, got everybody under his eye. Every bit of loving in the big blue sky. Ooh. sitting by the fire, sitting by the fire. We're sitting by the fire, sitting by the fire, yeah. Oh, my darling, sitting by the fire. Well, I'm leaving my bags in the great north woods. Little bit of loving, and I'm proud as I could be. Sitting on the stump with the cider and the sin, forgetting who we are, but remembering where we've been. Ooh. Sitting by the fire, oh yeah. Sitting by the fire. Sitting by the fire. Say, ho! Ho, my darling, sitting by the fire. We're sitting by the fire, sitting by the fire, yeah. Oh, my darling, sitting by the fire. Sitting by the fire, sitting by the fire.
Rock paper podcast, y'all.